We now bring to these microphones David James. Yes, you've guessed it. It's that time of the week when David and I will have a conversation right here on Prophecy Today Weekend about an issue that confronts not only the body of Christ, the church, but I would say for this 4th of July special edition of Prophecy Today Weekend, we're going to talk about America as well, but as it relates to the Islamic growth in America, the population growth, as has been the case witnessed in Europe as well. David, earlier I had a conversation with Paul Brownback, a good friend of both of us, concerning the primary reason for Britain's decision to leave the European Union that no one can talk about, actually, and that is the growth and influence of Islam in Great Britain. Talk to me about that.
Well, I think that's true. I would agree with Dr. Brownback, and I read his article, The Elephant in the Room, and certainly what we see in Europe as far as the sentiments that brought the Brexit vote are possibly what is also propelling even Donald Trump, whom we've talked about, that some of the same ideas may be at work here.
What were the views of the founding fathers and framers of the Declaration of Independence concerning Islam and Muslims, if they had any views?
Well, it's interesting, and it's kind of mixed. Because religious freedom was built into their thinking, because they were breaking away from Great Britain as the sovereign country and the Church of England being the required religion there. For example, in 1776, John Adams made the statement that he believes the Islamic prophet Muhammad was a sober inquirer after truth, just like Confucius, Socrates, and other thinkers. George Washington made the statement that he would be willing to hire what they called Mohammedans at that time, a Muslim, if they were a good worker. In 1790, the South Carolina legislative body gave legal status to a community of Moroccans. John Adams, at the Treaty of Tripoli, he mentioned that the character of enmity against the laws of religions or tranquility of Muslims was not something that the United States was against. And even Benjamin Franklin said that he'd be willing to have a meeting and give a pulpit to someone who was a Muslim. So there's certainly a mixed bag there concerning the founding fathers.
You know, that's interesting information. I did not even know that history myself. Well, last year, when Dr. Ben Carson was running for president, he came under a lot of fire for saying that an observant Muslim should not be president of the United States. Now, do you think his concerns were valid then and are still valid today?
Well, I think they are. He did an interview, I think it was back in September of last year, and he brought this up, and he was challenged on several occasions, but I think he was taken out of context. And what his point was that if someone could not faithfully uphold the Constitution of the United States and defend it and would be willing to relinquish their views of the tenets of Islam and the Quran, then they wouldn't be eligible to be president of the United States because they couldn't genuinely swear primary allegiance to the United States. And in fact, going back to the founding fathers and early framers of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they had similar views. And this was their thinking because they were thinking in the context of the population of America being at least based in Christianity, and not talking about whether they were born-again believers, but based in Christianity. For example, in 1788, a Supreme Court judge made this statement that it is objected that people of America may perhaps choose representatives who have no religion at all, and he's talking about the freedom of religion clause, and that pagans and Mohammedans may be admitted into offices, but he said it is never to be supposed that the people of America will trust their dearest rights to people who have no religion at all or a religion that is materially different. And then there was Samuel Johnston, who was the governor of North Carolina and a member of the Constitutional Convention in 1788. He said that those who are Mohammedans or any others who are not professors of the Christian religion can never be elected to office of the president or other high office. And then he gave one condition for that, that it would be possible, he said, if the people of America lay aside the Christian religion altogether. And unfortunately, I think that we're beginning to see that, and have been seeing it for some time, which sets this up for exactly what they were concerned about.
Well, speaking of freedom of religion, we know that that's an important foundational principle in this country, and it is clearly embodied in the First Amendment to the Constitution. So how does this then relate to Islam and Muslims in America?
Well, a lot of people point back to the Treaty of Tripoli, which was signed by President John Adams in 1797. And Article 11 has a phrase that states the government of the United States of America is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. The First Amendment to the Constitution says that the United States, the government, will not make any law respecting an establishment of religion or impede the free exercise of religion. Now, as that relates to Islam, the fundamental tenets of Islam is that there should be an Islamic worldwide caliphate, a kingdom that is ruled by Muslims, which is in direct contradiction to the principles and the founding principles of this country. So those who would be adherents and strictly observant Muslims could not uphold these founding principles. So it's not a matter of freedom of religion, because their religion is a way of life which touches on the political and military, and certainly Islam has been established militarily at the sword throughout history.
David, let's circle back now to Paul Brownback's article, The Elephant in the Room. He argued that a major underlying issue in the Brexit vote was immigration and the explosive growth of Islam in Great Britain and the effect that Islam is having on the culture of Great Britain. Now, how does this compare then to what is happening here in the United States?
Well, to give it some context, let's talk just a little bit about Europe real briefly, about the growth there, so we can put that in context for the United States. Between 1989 and 1998, the Islamic population grew by more than 100% in Europe. In 1998, 7% of the babies born within the European Union were Muslim, and in Brussels, which had a recent terrorist attack, it was as much as 57%. 57% of the babies born in Brussels were born to Muslim parents. Now, in America, the number of Muslims is about 2% of the population, roughly 6 million, but the estimates are that this is going to continue to grow rapidly. And in fact, it did grow by 25% in the 10 years between 1989 and 98. For example, in 1990, there were only 50 Islamic schools in America. Today, that's over 200. The number of mosques since 1990, it's tripled to now more than 2,500. So the growth is rapid, and it's affecting the culture in many ways.
This last week, David, we saw an attack at the airport there in Istanbul, which left over 40 people dead. And a week before that, there was an attack on a nightclub in Orlando, Florida. And yet, our own government seems to be in denial about the true nature of Islam.
You know, this really bothers me, because we're talking about not just those in leadership, for example, the president or the Congress, but we're talking about now it's extending to the FBI and those in the State Department and the CIA. For example, after the Orlando bombing, they wanted to scrub any references that the killer made to Islam. Now, you know, you and I do our research, but we have huge numbers of men who are trained in doing research to point out specific threats and to understand the enemy. But when you come to the FBI, the CIA, the State Department, this is what they are skilled at, and they have hundreds of people doing this. So either they are being willfully ignorant, which means these people shouldn't have their job, or they are intentionally lying to the American people, and it's part of a broader agenda. This is a serious problem, and there is no excuse for this, which is, again, why I think the political situation is in such turmoil here in the United States, and I think reflecting what we saw that Dr. Brownback was talking about in Great Britain, and now in Europe in general, because there are now at least 8 countries talking about leaving for similar reasons.
Well, and at the same time, the media here in America seems more willing to talk about this issue, and we hear terms like radical Islam, or maybe moderate Islam. Even these labels actually represent a fundamental misunderstanding of Islam, don't they?
Well, they absolutely do. The fact is that those that the media calls radical Islam, those are faithful Muslims. They are not radically changing the fundamental doctrines of Islam. ISIS is perhaps the purest expression of Islam because they are directly reflecting the actions and attitudes and teachings of the founder, Muhammad. It is said that he beheaded 700 Jewish men in one day, and he oversaw that. And the idea of moderate Muslims, when you talk about hijacking Islam, I would put it this way. It's the moderate Muslims who have hijacked Islam, changed it in order to live in peace. So these are very misleading labels.
Talk to me about that elephant in the room again, not as it relates to Great Britain, but as it relates to the church today. Looks like those in the church don't want to recognize the truth and reality of Islam, and it's anti-Semitic, it's anti-America, it's anti-Christ type of philosophy, do they?
Well, that's true, and that's a serious problem. We have several issues that are fundamental to this. One is a lack of biblical teaching in the churches, so people don't understand Christianity and the exclusive nature of the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The salvation is found in Him alone. There is a pluralistic idea that has invaded the church, and that is the idea that all religions are equally valid. We're in a postmodern society that has invaded the church that says we can't really know for sure absolute truth, and therefore we shouldn't take a stand, and therefore we shouldn't make distinctions between ourselves and those of other religions that do not follow the Bible and who are not followers of Jesus Christ.
Well, we indeed need to be students of God's Word. And indeed, if we don't stand up to what the Lord wants us to do in these days, naming our enemy, explaining what they are all about, what their desired goals are, what their eschatology, even Islamic eschatology, says wipe out all non-Muslims, we're going to have to face the consequences. Unless the rapture of the church takes place, of course, and that would be such a blessing. David, thank you for your research, some great information, some historical information I've never heard, but it's right on target. Appreciate it so much, buddy. We'll have another conversation next week.
Thanks, Jimmy. Happy 4th of July.
Thank you very much.